Welcome to Mecha Do About Nothing, the only mecha podcast used as psychological torture on abandoned spaceships. I'm your host, Ian Gregory.
And I'm your host, Daniel Forziat.
And this week we watched episodes 21 through 30 of Votoms, Armored Trooper Votoms, Soko Kihei Votoms.
Got him, dude.
Got him. Nailed it. Anyway, about the opening, I'm just like imagining in this episode, Chirico wakes up and they're playing like war crimes footage with loud patriotic music. And I'm imagining instead of that, he wakes up and it's just a video of us going, "Welcome to Mecha Do About Nothing." And he starts crying and scratching at himself because he doesn't want to listen to it anymore.
It's like he's got his eyes like pried open and it's just this playing. If we had a video podcast, that would make more sense. But
poor Chirico. That's never going to happen, though. For one thing, we have like 20 regular listeners and we love all of you like they're our own children, but no one needs to see what we look like while we record this.
Also, we do some editing of our audio, or sorry, I shouldn't say we. Ian does some editing of our audio.
Let's be real.
And I guess you can do that also in video, but it would just be weirder, right? To just have like cuts. A jump cut. Yeah.
It'd be like the vlog style where every sentence, you know how they do that, where it's like... They cut every like part.
It's like, "What's up,
sentence.
Guys? Today I'm going to Best Buy to pick up the newest season of Lost," and then it just like cuts to them like picking up the DVD.
Or
and
I just mean where it's them like mid sentence where they're like, so
"Oh,
here's
I know what
thing.
You're talking
cut.
About."
I was like, recently at a store. Cut. Like, and you're like, "What the?"
And it's always their head is in a different position. That's how it's like.
Well, they don't try to hide
thing.
It.
Yeah,
it's the style thing for some reason.
God, I'm glad that's dead. I'm glad the
is like, it
the,
dead?
Yeah, well, that was like what late 2000s.
No, early 2010s.
No. All right. I mean, regardless, I'm going to feel old, whichever
one you
say.
I think, Dan,
we
just moved to a different part of the internet where things like that don't show up. I think they're still going strong wherever they are.
Damn. Okay. I'm not going to date myself or say who I watched when I did, so I'm going to just end this here.
Smart. So let's see. Dan, this means that we are like 3/5 of the way through Votoms. And we've only done two arcs. We are two arcs into this series.
We kind of can cheat using the holy bible of Armored Trooper Voltoms, the Geocities website.
The Geocities Armored Voltoms site, which is really incredible. It's so useful, especially when I'm writing the summary.
And we can see that there are only four arcs. So, like, in technically, we're, like, kind of halfway through the show in terms of, like, what's going to happen.
And it looks like Kumen, the jungle arc, is the longest arc.
Yes. And boy, is this going to be a dense show. It already is dense.
It shows
a lot
extremely
of stuff
dense.
Happens. But we got two more sizable arcs on the way.
Yeah. Dan, what were your overall feelings about this? These 10 episodes?
So I kind of wanted to talk to you about this kind of later. Uh-huh. But in the sense that, like, I was like, is this jungle our desert, or was it not? Like, could we have something more desert like to happen? In the sense that I don't think this arc was bad, and I don't think these episodes were bad, but when you think about how we were talking about this arc last week, and it was almost the entirety of this arc this week, man, this was long.
So we watched 10 episodes. One of them was a clip show. Two of them were on a new arc, the last two, and that means that 7 of them were wrapping up this part of the story.
And I feel like this
was
like...
that's half the arc. I think there's 14 episodes in this arc, if you include the clip show. So that means, like, the clip show from last week, because there was a different one.
Hmm.
It's something.
It's sizable. I thought there were some really good parts of... It's like, I felt like every other episode for me was like good and bad. So it was really like, I don't know. Like, we'll talk about later. Like, there's the part where they're
tricky. So much stuff happens in every episode that, like, some of it is really good and you're like, yeah, this is really cool. And some of it is really boring. Or you're like, why are we doing this again? You know what I mean?
Uh-huh. I mean, what about you? I mean, we're kind of just going back and forth. What'd you think?
I liked it. I think I like it more now that it's done.
Yeah.
So, no, what I mean by that, though, is in the moment where you're like, oh, okay, here we go. They're in the jungle. They're doing this. They're doing that. But then when you look back on it, your brain naturally sorts out the moments that were the most interesting. Uh-huh. And you do end up with a lot of stuff where you're like, overall, this arc has a lot of interesting things, especially for, like, Chirico as a character and advances the plot. You do get to like have a bunch of questions answered.
Mm-hmm.
But it's in the moment, I feel like it drags. There are scenes that could be cut. They repeat some things a little too much. I think the earlier parts are weaker, where it's just them doing regular skirmishes.
Yeah.
And there are parts of those skirmishes that are cool. I'm thinking of the one where they go play Russian roulette. What a great episode. But there are also some where he fights Ypsilon like 4 times and they just keep running away from each other. And that's to build him up as a villain. But Ypsilon's not actually that compelling of a character.
Yeah, I'm with you. We really don't know much about Ypsilon, even throughout this. We just know he's like a super soldier that is obsessed with Fiona, and that's like kind of it.
Yeah. So, I don't know, I have mixed feelings about it. I'm glad it's over, because now I can look back on it and be like, wow, where's the parts of this sick? And then also I can just not think about the parts that were so boring.
Yeah, for sure. I agree.
All right. I think I'm going to get into this. I got halfway through the summary. I'm like, oh, it's not that long this time. And then it kept going.
You're like, oh, wait, crap, stop.
There's just a lot that we have to cover. So here I go. The mission to attack the Vila headquarters begin, but Khan Yun is in charge, and he decides they should commit some war crimes, anger the mercenaries, and then blow their secrecy. Now they have to fight their way forward to the enemy base, because they can't just sail up the river, and they are attacked by the Vila with Ypsilon in the lead. The plan is to have Ypsilon kill Chirico in front of Fianna to break her, like, mental block, but Fianna interferes, spinning a helicopter with her and Burrows in it into the middle of their fight, causing a crash. Chirico goes to track down Fianna while Burrows escapes, and then he manages to fight off Ypsilon to save her, and he allows Ypsilon to live, but while Chirico is distracted, Khan Yun abducts Fianna. Then Chirico finds him and throws him into a river to save her, and they believe that Khan Yun to be dead. Foreshadowing. Then they meet up with the other mercenaries and decide to continue their assault on Conjolmon's palace. Chirico could escape with Fianna, but he desires closure and wants answers only Burrows can provide. Khan Yun turns out to be alive and is rescued, and then tells the general of EX-10, Gon Nu, that Chirico has found Fianna. The Milkian army is also preparing to attack Conjolmon, which will end the war definitively. The attack begins as our characters make their way into the palace. Petaria desires to find and kill Conjolmon, while Chirico is looking for Burrows. Petaria finds Conjolmon and reveals that the two of them were childhood friends. Petaria challenges him to a balancing duel while wondering why Conjolmon started a war that he didn't believe in and that he didn't believe he could win, especially because Conjolmon was so progressive as a kid. Conjolmon allows Petaria to kill him and reveals that he became the symbol of traditional Kumen values so that when he died, the old ways would die with him and drag his country into the future. He gives Petaria the key to his escape ship and dies. Chirico corners Burrows, who explains that the society's goal in Kumen was to refine the PS, to reduce their wild emotions into pure hatred. Fianna shoots Ypsilon, and Gon Nu arrives to capture Fianna. Then the Milkians begin to bomb the facility, killing Gon Nu and Burrows, while Ypsilon escapes. Chirico and Fianna prepare to fly away in Kanjumon's ship when Khan Yun appears again. However, the mercenary Shaco defies his orders and throws Khan Yun into a deep pit, killing him, hopefully for the last time. Chirico and Fianna escape in the shuttle into outer space. We learn in an afterword that Kumen becomes a republic and that 90% of the mercenaries under Gon Nu's command were killed in the fight. Then there's a clip show. Chirico and Fianna wake up on a massive abandoned ship and they wander around trying to figure out who captured them or where they are. The ship is headed somewhere on autopilot through Balorant space, which were, if you remember, the enemies of Milkia from that 100-year war that ended in the first episode. Then, randomly, footage of Chirico's Red Shoulder Division with loud patriotic music begins to play throughout the ship, showing the Red Shoulder killing civilians. Chirico is ashamed of his past, and Fianna is understanding, but neither can bring themselves to talk to the other. Balorant forces arrive to interrogate the mysterious ship, and Chirico decides that he has to fight them, because that's all he's good at, and he doesn't want them to capture PS. He repels the Balorant forces, but predicts that more will come. The Balorant capture audio of Chirico talking about the PS, and decide to pursue the ship in order to capture it. Roshina, who's that Milkian general who we've seen a bunch, is ordered to stop pursuing Chirico, but reveals that he knows where Chirico is, on the ship, and General Botentine is like, okay, I guess you can keep doing it, but it's sort of a little more underhanded than that. Chirico cannot sleep because of the footage, and he's becoming delirious and losing his sense of self. Bada bing, bada boom.
Dang. I like the little part where you just went off. I was looking at, like, while you were reading it, and I was like, wait, what?
Yeah. Okay.
It's like he's just out of control.
All right, so we've got some highlights here.
Yes.
All
of them involve people dying.
Yeah. First for me is just like a cool moment, which is it's the very first episode of this block. Chirico's in the AT fighting someone else and he gets pinned down and he just flips up the lid of his cockpit, draws his pistol and shoots the other dude in the head.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Judging by what you wrote here, I was like, okay, Chirico kills a lot of people. But yes, no. I agree. That is sick. And also the world's strongest handgun rifle in the world.
Yeah, but it was cool. That was just Chirico being cold.
Yeah, that was like, that's when his like red shoulder, whatever, like kicked in.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. My next is Kanyun dying twice. So when Kanyun fell in the river, I was like, oh my god, he finally, but there's no way he's dead, right?
Yes,
like,
I think everyone thought the same.
Classic way to kill someone without actually killing them. So then two episodes later, he turns up at the very beginning, and I was like, god, this guy.
It's a really quick turnaround, too, because they do a thing where they're like, I think he's like deliriously walking through the jungle, like clearly beaten up and stuff, and then he makes it back. I thought that they were going to totally do a thing where like at the very end he's like, and I was alive the whole time. But no,
they actually needed him in the plot to go tell Gonnu that Chirico found the PS, right? Mm-hmm. But it does involve Chirico telling all the mercenaries that Kanyun is dead and them all being like, damn, I mean, that's fine.
Yeah, because no one really liked the dude.
Well, and then when he shows up again, it's this great moment where Shaco is like, he's the one who's always been following orders. He doesn't really want to go around with Chirico. And Kanyun is like, haha, now I've got you and I can kill you and take Fianna for myself. And Shaco is just like, man, fuck this guy. And he picks him up. Kanyun shoots Shaco in the leg and Shaco just like shrugs and throws him off of like a 1,000-foot pit.
It's like a real like Emperor Palpatine Darth Vader sequence.
It is. That's exactly what it is.
But and yeah, minor spoilers for Star Wars.
Episode spoilers six, for Star
five,
Wars. Return of the Jedi, yeah. Six. I hate to say it, but we did not see Kanyun's body.
Oh no,
he's dead. He's dead. He can't be alive.
And it's gonna be a lot like Star Wars Episode 9, The Return of Kanyun. Got it. Minor spoilers for Star Wars Episode 9.
The dead speak.
Yeah. Kanyun is alive.
If you played the Fortnite Votoms event, you would know that Kanyun is still alive.
But it can't be Fortnite. It has to be like Azure Lane. It has to be some like real anime thing that has nothing to do with Votoms.
Votoms Fate Grand Order.
Yes. The crossover where one of your, I don't even know what they're called in Fate.
Servants.
One of your servants. It's just a Votom.
That would be really good. I'll take it. Do you want to do one of yours?
Yeah, my only one is also someone dying, and it's when they're fighting in another... They love pits. They're fighting in pit.
Yeah.
And this is a really cool fight, actually, because it's, like, really tense. These people are, like, falling, and it's like, oh my god, you'll die. And
I think this is the same pit that Kanyun does get thrown into, so it's not are that many pits.
So Chirika's, like, hanging out on this ledge, precariously, mm-hmm. if you will. And Ypsilon like appears on another ledge, just happenstantially above him. And I forget the dude's name, but one of Chirico's like comrades is like, I got him, dude. I'm behind him and he doesn't see me. I'm totally gonna push him off the ledge. And Chirico's like, no, don't do it. And of course he just gets like judo thrown off the ledge and just doesn't do anything and dies. And it's like kind of hilarious.
Yeah, I forget that dude's name.
It's like the that's like the, when I see that I'm like, ah, this is totally an anime from the 80s, right? Because it's just like so stupid. No, don't do it. I got him, and it's like, oh, yeah, all right.
Judo throw. My last one is when Pitaria goes to Conjolmon's room and he has him at gunpoint. He's like, just shoot me, and he sees the spears and he's like, no, we're going to do balancing. I was like, oh my god, they're gonna, like, I saw it coming before they said it, obviously, because they show the spears, like, oh my god, balancing, and they brought it back. I loved that, like, that little, that we know what it is, and we can just see this, like, ancestral art, and it's a good fight. They're jumping around the room, but then, like, Kanjumon lets himself get stabbed, and they have this great discussion about, you know, beliefs and what's happened to them as they've grown up. It's a great scene. That's a really good scene. I guess that's also a scene of someone getting killed.
Yes, they're 100% as us having people die.
But this a lot show of people is, die in Votoms, okay?
Yeah, which I guess feeds into a lot of our discussion topics of just like,
yeah,
everything. Well,
I guess for the first part is just our jungle war discussion, right?
We're still in it. We're still in the jungle hanging out. As we said, it's extremely long.
It's a lot like being in the desert.
Yeah.
Ideologically, if not aesthetically, but
it's also like being in the Vietnam War.
So we talked a lot about the Vietnam War movie elements of this, and there are even more in this scene.
So, I think the one for me, and I think the same for you, is they're starting their super secret mission where they can't have anyone find out what they're doing, and they're going up a riverboat again to like the enemy's headquarters, right? Because they're going to sneak in and like kill everyone. And of course, Naturally, Kanyu is like getting a little uppity because
he's the world's dumbest person.
He's the world's dumbest person, but he's also like, dude, this Chirico guy is getting a lot of power, and only I can be the leader of this mission. So I'm going to like power trip really hard and force him to just do what I want. So a bunch of civilians are going by in a boat, right? And they're like, oh, cool. Let's just let them pass because they're just civilians carrying, like, oranges
and they search them.
Yeah. Which, and, you know, they're only carrying, like, apples and oranges and, like, you know, they're just traders or whatever. And as they're like, okay, you can go on your way after they just destroyed their boat. So they start, like, you know, going separate ways on the river. And then Kanyu just, like, gets on, like, the backward mounted machine gun and just explodes their boat and kills them all. And he's like, I saw an antenna on that boat. We couldn't let them live because, you know, they're going to radio the enemy. And it's, like, the most, like, facepalm moment that, literally everyone in the show has where it's like, if we would have just let them go, nothing would have happened, but now a giant explosion occurred and everyone's gonna know we're here. Like, you are the most idiotic person.
Here's an interesting note about that scene. I read it the same way you did, right? That he just decided to shoot them after they left. The summary notes that exploded because the ship was secretly carrying explosives for the rebels. Which is not how I read it when I watched it.
I
thought it was weird the boat blew up, but I just took that to be, you know, anime stuff.
I'm not gonna hit on the geosities, dude. Sorry, man, if you're listening. But I think that is playing into it a little much. Unless there's like a hidden secret thing.
Well, there is the scene later where they go to that base and they see a similar boat that also has stuff on it.
But in the moment, they don't even mention that. Like, I felt like if it had explosives on it, Kanyu would be like, hey, did you see that? Like, a normal boat wouldn't explode. Like you know?
No, they don't address it at all. Kanyu just says, like, we couldn't let them go.
Yeah, I think, so that's why I think that, like, it was, like, anime, right? That was, like, 1980s anime where the boat has to explode or else how would you know that the boat blew up, right?
Yeah, and Chirico is right that you could have just sailed past this boat, right, kept your head down, they wouldn't know anything. And instead, they totally give themselves away with this in, like, a later scene where they attack that base because Kanyu insists they go in their ATs and they get in a big fight. And then they can't do what they were planning to do, which is just take the boat straight down the river to the enemy base.
Yeah, and I guess that leads into the second part, which they're right back to back, that attack on the temple, right?
Oh, yeah. So this is where they see the same boat.
And while this is not quite, like, a heavy reference, it's still, like, when I think about the Vietnam War, I think, fighting in the jungle. And then, okay, again, this is like American's movie perspective. And then occasionally you see, like, those old Buddhist temples and stuff, like, or whatever. And I was like, this, like, just felt like that to me, where it's just like these, like,
people. Yeah, those feature heavily in, like, The Things They Carried, which is a great book by Tim O'Brien about the Vietnam War. It's one of the only books I read in high school that I feel like actually meant something to me.
Wait. You're telling me The Great Gatsby did not impact you?
No, I do not care for
the
modernist, you don't care about, 1920s American writers. Hemingway and Fitzgerald and them do not do it for me. I read a lot of Hemingway. I took, like, a class on Hemingway in college, man, and there were a couple stories I liked, but most of them I was just not interested in.
Yeah, but Hemingway was a Chad, and everyone knows that.
Yeah, well,
Chad, in any case, had a brain deficiency.
That features, like, the temples and temple desecration is part of, like, this legacy of the Vietnam War in America. And the boat massacres, the boat scene where they shoot the boat is a lot like the swift boat scenes in Apocalypse Now, where they search other boats and they're getting shot at and they're shooting at people on their way up the river. And it's been, like, 6 years since I watched Apocalypse Now, so I don't remember the details of it. But that felt like a visual reference there.
What's the one with Duality of Man?
Sure.
Wait, which one is that? The guy, he's like
Apocalypse Now.
Is that Apocalypse Now?
Wait, which one are you talking about?
The guy who's got like the helmet where it's got like the piece on it and everything, and that's like where the quote is, where he's like, "Oh, it's the duality of man," right? He's like in a war, but he's also like wants peace. Is that Apocalypse Now?
I don't think it's Apocalypse Now.
That is a Vietnam War movie that I'm thinking.
I think duality of man might be its own. No, I don't know.
Okay. That's like the quote.
Maybe that's Full Metal Jacket. I think that's Full Metal Jacket.
That might be Full Metal Jacket.
Born to Kill, Peace Button. Yeah.
Yeah. You're right. You're right. Okay. I'm with you.
So, I mean, there was already a Full Metal Jacket reference. Is that where the Deer Hunter is the Russian roulette. So there are references here to Vietnam War movies, which all came out, the ones we're talking about, in like the late 70s and early 80s, a few years before this was made. So the timing works there too. But between, as far as major media releases of 1979, I would rather watch Mobile Suit Gundam than Apocalypse Now.
Heck yeah.
All right. Let's talk about Kanjelmon, Dan, the king of Kumen.
Our boy.
He's sort of in the background of a lot of these scenes over the last part, where they like occasionally cut to his control room and he's like, "I don't want to fight like this," or "I don't want to do this," or "Don't send Ypsilon." And he's always seemed weird because he's always had a different agenda than Burroughs. Uh-huh. And at the end here, he basically says, like, every single like Vila rebel, come to my base, right? Instead of keeping them spread out and attacking like he has been.
Mm-hmm.
And like there's a whole scene where Monica, who we aren't really talking about, overhears him say that he thinks the war is lost and he never really thought it could be won, and she has a crisis of faith and then gets shot trying to tell Pataria, which then lets Pataria know that Kanjelmon didn't actually want this war, which leads to their conversation during balancing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what I expected out of him as a character, but it wasn't what we got, you know?
I think he was a little underdeveloped, but maybe on purpose, because there's only so much time in the show. Because the whole time, I didn't really care about him. He just seemed like...
I thought
like
he wasn't important.
Yeah, right? He seemed like just sort of like a faceless bad guy up until the end, like you're saying, where he all of a sudden becomes like kind of ultra important. Yeah. Not, I shouldn't say ultra important, but he's
very important.
He serves a point, and you're like, oh, okay, this is like interesting. Like he actually starts talking, and that entire scene is interesting because there's no like major character in any of that, right? Like the show does a thing where Chirico and Fiona are like our only major characters. I think we've kind of established.
You could sort of count Vanilla and Goto and Kokona, but honestly, after the way this ends, I don't know if we'll ever see them again.
That's like, what I mean.
The way this ends makes it very strange if they turned up again.
And I actually did want to talk about characters later, but anyhow, so it's interesting that we have these two characters right before the balancing scene, like talking, or I guess in the balancing scene, because these are not like characters I don't mean this in a mean way, but we don't really care about. All of a sudden becoming like these two important figures in like this duel. And it's like, oh, okay.
They sort of build up Pataria, right? With Monica from like the first time.
That's
where
true.
We know he's local and we get this sort of insight.
Yeah, he does have like emotional reactions when like people are getting like gunned down and stuff like that too.
So they built him up to being important. And Kanjelmon is important in the sense that we know he's important to the like the story and that he's like the king of Kumen.
Uh-huh.
So it's not too surprising when like suddenly he gets more screen time, because he does have an important role even if he hasn't had it before. But there is a lot of time in the show spent on side characters who we won't see again, probably.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really interesting.
Yeah. The show's not afraid to like utilize.
Yeah, we're sort of jumping ahead of actually where we're supposed to be thinking about. Real quick. I am super interested in the mercenaries here, because so Gan Nu was sort of on Chirico's side against Kanyun in the beginning, if you recall.
Yes.
And then the moment he sort of smells blood, where he's like, oh, I could capture the prototype myself and then use that to negotiate with Melkia. He turns on Chirico and he's like, all right, Kanyun, let's do this. Like, tell me everything you know. And Kanyun is the sort of classic antagonist who's jealous of Chirico. He's incompetent, he isn't respected, but he feels like he has to be. You know, he feels like he deserves respect.
Yeah.
So they're like this interesting, like, opportunist and, like, jerk combination that they sort of turn from allies of Chirico nominally to these antagonists.
Mm-hmm. Because, That's a good point, because at the beginning, Kan Yoon was sort of a strict, arrogant leader, but wasn't necessarily bad, right?
He's like, just annoying.
We didn't know his morals, because again, they're fighting in this, you know, kind of horrible war. Everyone's kind of awful. Yeah, so he's just like, you're a spy, we found like a chip in you, blah, blah, blah. But it's like, this is all fair, right? Like, this is what a dude would do. And then he sort of like changes, right, before that mission where, you know, he guns down those people in the boat, where he sort of starts getting annoyed about how important Chirico's becoming in this fight, and that's where the things start, like, the power starts to shift.
Well, he also, like, abandons Chirico last arc, if you recall. He like, abandoned him when they couldn't find him. He's like, we don't need him.
I mean, so I still think that's, like, kind of fair, though, right?
Yeah, just, there was, like, a reason for it, and it was sort of... It wasn't like he was actively trying to kill Chirico.
Yeah. Right?
He just didn't care about him or want him to come back.
I totally agree.
It's like a very logical, though. You see Kan Yoon, like, as his grasp on the mercenaries slips, and as Chirico becomes more popular, you can see his antagonism rise.
Gosh. Can I just say, I'm going to minor tangent. What's up with these people with, like, the two-word names that
Gun sound new, like... Kan Yoon?
Yeah, Kaifun. God. Also, I was thinking Kaifun from Macross and how they're the worst characters in the world. God. Kan Yoon and Kaifun, Gun new.
And I really like Shaco, who's the guy who dresses like a pro wrestler, where he's the one who feels like he has to stick with his boss, you know, and he helps Kan Yoon out, but then he's the one who, like we described in detail, turns on him in the end when he decides like what he wants is unconscionable. I think that's a real Vietnam thing, where, you know, soldiers in the Vietnam War did horrible things because their commanding officers told them to do horrible things.
Mm-hmm.
And Shaco, like, defies that norm. He does draw this moral line and refuses to do things and overthrows Kan Yoon. I think that's really interesting to see, like, how easy it is to follow orders, but also it's sort of unusual that he decides finally, like, enough is enough.
Yeah,
but also, like, part of that might just be that Kan Yoon is personally very unlikable. Next up, I mean, we've got this next arc. We were talking about how every arc seems to be a different genre. That so far is holding to be true, right?
Wait. Which one did you predict? Did you say Western?
I said cowboys, and you said space. Okay. So you win.
Oh, I did? I don't even remember.
You said they were going to go to space next, and I thought they wouldn't until the last arc.
Ah, that's right. Okay. But this is this is not what I had in mind. I'm going to be honest with you. I was expecting, like, Gundam space, where it's, like, you know, political, and they're, like, flying around and blah, blah, blah. This is something else.
This is like a perverse parody of that, where they're on that ship and the ship is going somewhere. You know, we've talked about this, the classic mecha plot. Big spaceship with mechs on it needs to get to somewhere, and the whole show is them fighting as they try to get to that place.
God,
that's
I love
079, it. That's Macross, that's Yamato. This is like a weird version of that, where they have
Ideon.
It's Ideon, exactly. They have no control over their ship. And they're going somewhere, but they can't stop it. They don't want to fight the people they're fighting. It's like the reverse mecha plot, right? Or like the mecha plot gone wrong. I really like it.
Yeah, this caught me off guard. I was saying earlier before we recorded where I think this is going to be how the show works, is there's going to be a clip show between every arc.
Yeah.
And I like to watch the clip shows because the show is dense and it's like a good reminder of like... of, like, everything that very important that happens.
And usually the stuff they bring up in the clip show is stuff you should pay attention to. That maybe slipped you by when you actually watched it. But if they're bringing it up again, it means, like, this will be important later.
So this does a thing where it ends the clip show of Fianna and Chirico, like, trying to escape the, like, the Melkian base together in the very beginning.
Yeah.
When he, like, first found her. And that's where, like, the clip show ends. But then this new arc is like a surprise thing where they, as you said, they like kind of like are on this like ship and they're like,
they don't
not
even
sure
remember
why.
How they got there. Yeah.
And I'm like, wait, what is happening? Like, I was actually genuinely confused.
Well, the real trouble,
I don't know what's going on.
Where I got confused is, so the episode ends with them in the rocket shooting off into the atmosphere and they're like, here we go, onto a new future. And then the clip show, the very next episode begins with him on the table being tortured, right?
Yes,
and
that's
like,
what I
where's
mean.
The,
it's
where's
really
the prototype?
Confusing words
and I was
happening.
Like, wait, did they capture him off camera and now they're interrogating
the same
him?
Thing.
Like, so that's just a clip show placement problem, but I was like, what is happening?
Yes.
Now?
That's what I was, because it makes sense, because then it shows him and Fianna, like, on that ship together.
Yeah.
Right? And, like, but, like, that would make sense because it's only them who left. And I'm like, what's going on? But, yeah, then you can kind of figure out that that's not, it's something else.
Yeah, that's mostly just us complaining. So, this is, like, a space horror section, right? It's a bit like Alien, where they're on this massive abandoned cruiser, and the first episode of this arc, half of it, is this them walking around with their guns out trying to figure out what's going on and like where it's taking them.
Yes.
it's a really suspenseful start, and it is legitimately creepy.
Uh-huh. It's very dark. The ship is like, I guess I was thinking more like Dead Space when I thought it. I don't know if you played Dead Space.
Dead Space is literally like Alien, so
yeah, okay, that's fair. I'm sorry, I'm a zoomer. Yeah, so it's very dark. They don't know what's happening. It's supposedly a massive ship, but I don't. Have we seen it from the outside? Like, we don't know what they're on.
It's huge. Okay,
yeah. But yeah, we don't know where it's going. I guess we don't know the origin, really.
We don't know who built it, because what's his name? The general. You know who I'm talking about here. Roshina is like, we don't know what ship it is. We've compared it to every ship in our database, and we don't know who.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. Which is equally horrifying, too, because it could mean there's, like, some third party going on.
The Secret Society.
Who could that be?
So, it's a lot of suspense, and then there's this great turn where when the music starts playing, right? And you're like, oh, my God, something is happening on this ship, right? And it's this loud, incessant, patriotic music with all this footage of war crimes. A lot of war crimes in this show.
Oh, yeah, on the monitor.
It's creepy. It's legitimately creepy. You're like, who's doing this? Why are they doing this? And it can fade, and, like, it's so clearly tailored specifically to Chirico that, like, the whole thing feels like a Saw setup.
Yeah. And then in the next room, you're going to have to kill Fianna and pull the key out of her lungs. It's like, all right, settle down. I do like to imagine, though, that he turns the monitor on and it's just mecha nothing. Can someone make that? Ian, can you make that? I'll get someone to make that.
Get someone to make that. Okay. So it's creepy, yada yada. Also, what I like about this arc is that it changes from being like about this military conflict or this police conflict. Now it's, the focus is kind of on the relationship between Fianna and Chirico.
Yes.
And that's such a nice change. Like, we get to see these internal character moments. That's the focus right now. And how this is affecting each of them.
Yeah, I think this is, man, this is like tying back to our character thing too. It's interesting that I think this is the point where we have established our two main characters, like, officially. If it wasn't already obvious in like the first episode where they, like, he meets like a mysterious woman, it is now, because we don't have Fianna in basically all of the Udo arc, right?
Yeah.
Like, she's not there. But then she shows up briefly. An extremely important character in the last arc. And now they're together, and it's like this. Okay, we've established now who the two most important characters on the show are. Mm-hmm. And then, as you had written here, it's interesting to see how they interact now. Because before, it was a little bit like Lala, Soon, and Amuro, of course, where they have some sort of psychic connection, but they're not quite sure why. Then they meet in Kunmen, and they, like, sort of automatically fall in love. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever. It's anime. But they don't really have, like, these... There's that moment we said before where Chirico's like, I gotta go finish this, and she's like, no, don't do it, blah, 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 like, I don't want to lose you. And then now it's like they're sort of past the honeymoon phase where it's just like, oh, these two people are stuck on a ship together and they gotta like find out what's happening. And that's where we're gonna probably start to see some friction between them, right? Where they're like not sure what's gonna happen next. Yeah, I think it's interesting, right?
And I think like I really like that they now have to work through this and they've got their own problems. Fianna has like no memories because she was born recently, but she's got the emotional maturity of an adult, but all she knows is war, and all Chirico knows is war. There's this like really interesting dynamic where they just don't know how to talk to each other at all. And I like that we see this, and I hope that they don't get separated again, because I'd like to see the rest of the show being about building this relationship between them as they, you know, fight against the secret society and so on.
Yeah, I hope they stick together too. I think this show would be really detrimental if they get pulled apart. I mean, they can probably temporarily get pulled apart,
right? But if we spend another like half an arc with them separated or a full arc with them separated, I would be bummed.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's kind of cool having like the power couple together to see if like they are the people that can kind of conquer the show. Yeah,
and there was a moment where she's like, "Don't go!" Like he's like, "I have to go fight," and I'm like, "Wait, isn't Fianna like better than you?"
Yeah, like she's, you know, they specifically sort of like designed.
Sideline her a bit here, and I'm hoping they don't forget that she's like a killer pilot.
Which maybe leads into our next topic, Ian.
Yeah, well, damn, the as segues a result are of this, strong. Good job, Dan. As a result of this, like, we get to see so much stuff about Chirico now, and we learn a little more about the Red Shoulders, his tortured past. I think he's a really interesting character, right? Because he's got a clear sense of morals. He won't do things he thinks are bad, or he disapproves of Kanyun doing things he thinks are bad. But also, yes, he really thinks he's only good for fighting, and he constantly puts himself in situations where all he can do is fight, because he thinks that's like all he's capable of. And it's not like he's trying to atone for his past. It's like he's let his past decide what his future is like. He says, if I've only ever done that, I can't change. And that's why he doesn't allow himself to love Fianna. It's because he's got it. He's a red shoulder. I like that
too. I love having an established character be our main character, because if you think about all the Gundam shows we watch, mm-hmm, where they're all kids, right? Which is kind of bad. But kids like intrinsically can't have pasts that matter. Like, think about Amuro.
Disagree with you. I have seen a lot of anime where 15-year-olds are like, I fought in the Civil War. Now I live alone and go to high school. There's like a Prozumi video about that.
The only one is Mikazuki that can say that, right? But it's like, you think about Amuro, and it's like, the only thing important from his past is that he's made Haro. He's pretty good with electronics. And his dad is Temre.
And he left his mom on Earth. That's important too.
Yeah, yeah. But it's like, those aren't like things. The whole point is that he's a kid who doesn't know anything, right? That's the whole point of Amuro. And you think about that, that's like almost every single Gundam pilot. He grew up in the suburbs, basically,
his whole life.
Yeah, it's like Camille Bidon, everyone. Same thing,
yeah.
Setsuna FSA, literally, well, okay, I guess
it's Setsuna FSA was a literal child soldier. Yeah. He's got trauma. You're right that Chirico is an adult with, or I don't know how exactly old it is, but he's got a long past, and he has a sense of who he is.
Yeah. Doesn't know how to drink alcohol yet, according to that one scene.
Oh, that's great. That's such a good character building scene. Is that, like, he's never relaxed like this, and he's never had alcohol before. Does he not drink beer in those scenes in the bar? I guess not. Or maybe he just meant liquor.
Yeah. Oh, well, to be fair, taking shots of vodka and drinking beer are completely different things.
Some of us started taking shots of vodka, Dan.
We were raised on that. But, yeah. Like, I'm trying to get at is that Chirico is an adult with seemingly an extremely complicated past with lots of different experiences that you can kind of draw on and have these weird, mysterious moments of, like, what happened to the Red Shoulders kind of thing. Or, like, even then, we don't know the basis of of Chirico, because, as I said before, I was like, wouldn't it be a good twist if, you know, maybe spoilers, maybe not, because we don't know. If he was, like, a super soldier, right?
Well, so, yeah, I have a hyper-conspiracy theory here.
Let's see it. I want to hear it.
Here's my theory. The Red Shoulders were actually the first iteration on the PS concept, and that Chirico's emotions and response to him fighting and his lack of, like, established history, where, like, he never had alcohol before, he still sort of doesn't know how to express himself, that's all part of that PS, like, first-stage conditioning. And we're going to find out that, like, him and Fianna are very similar in that they were both raised for war, and it's about how they can surpass their upbringing to, like, find love and become real people.
I actually think that's super spot on, because I think that alcohol scene is, like, really good hint at that, right?
He just doesn't have a past, sort of.
Yeah, where he was, like, born at 17 years old or something like that, right? And
it would explain a lot about why he was picked to go on that mission to rescue the PS, right? Maybe because he was a Red Shoulder, and the Red Shoulders are all sort of proto-PSs being developed by the Secret Society, or who the Secret Society has an awareness of. And it would explain why they have all this footage on hand of him, and how they know how to torture him, because, like, they know about his past and what will cause him to have the most emotional distress. I think that this ship is, like, a Secret Society thing, because we've seen, like, both the Melkian and the a Balorant military being like, what is this? But I bet this is Albert Killy, who's the last remaining Secret Society person we've met, being like, we're gonna take Chirico, we're gonna take Fianna and put them somewhere and like see if we can remember, because in Kumen they were all about like, we need to break the emotions of the PS, right?
Uh-huh.
That's what they're doing here to Chirico. I think that's what the secret is.
Dang, that's good. I like that.
But I think the show builds up to that, and they've really made a theme out of like fighting versus having emotions versus how do those emotions affect your ability to fight? How do you develop as a person when all you do is fight? And like Ypsilon is a great counterpoint because Ypsilon doesn't develop. All he builds is his hatred. And he doesn't try anything else.
Dang. If this is how the show ends, or if this is like a big reveal and we're right, I would have to say that it's probably the writers of this show did a fantastic job of like convincing you to figure that out yourself, and you know?
I think even if they don't make it textual that like the Red Shoulders were a prototype soldier, a perfect soldier concept or whatever, I think it still speaks to this show's depth of character that you can see the similarities between Chirico and Fianna, and that comparison's still valid, and how they both uh-huh. lack a history and how they're both developed in fighting, and that's sort of what draws them together, but also what makes them impossible to love each other because they don't know how to. That's still there, even without this prediction. I think it says that like the show really knows how to handle its characters well.
Yeah, that's really good. I like that.
Yeah. And you had a note here. Speaking of characters, Dan, get those transitions going.
Oh, my God. It's just on fire today. We kept bringing back to this. It's like hard to just talk about characters in one thing. We talked about this, I think, before as well. Where. Yes. The characters in this show, and this is always like a hot topic for us to talk about, like if there's too many characters, if too many characters are similar, but the characters in the show just get churned through in the sense that like the show is not afraid to introduce characters for an arc that have a purpose and then just get rid of them. Either they die.
It's great.
Which is
I love it.
A very common thing in this show is they just die, which is a good ending to a character. Or they just sort of get left behind, which I guess has only happened like two or three times with our original trio.
Goat and Vanilla and Kokona get left behind. And like Pataria is still alive, as far as we know, right? And Shaco. But those guys are still in Kumin. They're not leaving Kumin.
Yeah, and I feel like those characters are important enough that we will probably see them later. If there's like some final big fight between a lot of people.
It would be really cool if like they're off doing their own thing now. They've got a life outside this story.
But it's crazy how big our cast of characters for this show is, in like it's like not afraid to be like, okay, cool, here's a bunch of bikers and there's this people mining Jigerium and like this dude is like a corrupt policeman. It's like, what? But like the way they introduce those characters I think is really well done too, because they don't make you care about them and they don't make you focus on learning their names or focusing on
their parents and their backstory and their view on life. And it often for me comes back to Razavan, right? Which
oh god, it's killed him. It's always entered his mind.
It comes back to Razavan and it comes back to Evangelion, because Razavan is trying to do that Evangelion thing where you've got a recurring cast of however many characters and we learn a lot about their history and what makes them tick.
Uh-huh.
Evangelion works in this respect because we do that with like 5 to 6 characters. Razavan tries to do it with like 10. So, however, I would say we've had more important characters in Votoms than in Razavan, probably. We've had a lot of characters who are relevant enough for us to matter about their names and for them to matter to the plot. But Votoms does this really good thing where it introduces them in the context that they matter.
Yes, so instead of having a bunch of characters kind of what I was getting at. That's
hang
so
around
perfect.
On a bridge all day, like talking about their feelings and how their dad was a fisherman. So help me. Instead, it's like, here's Pataria. Pataria's thing is this stuff going on in Kumen, and we only see him in Kumen, and he has a whole character arc while he's in Kumen, and then he's gone.
Yes.
And they don't keep trying to bring up Kumen in other situations, and they don't expect us to, like, we see these characters' backstories instead of just having them tell us about them. I hate show don't tell. I think it's actually not a very good maxim, but it's clearly working here.
When you have, like, a really smooth brain like myself, and you have trouble keeping track of all of the characters, that makes it very easy for like an average viewer probably to understand a majority of what your characters are doing, right? That's so perfect. Like anytime we saw that police chief in Udo who was corrupt, he was always doing corrupt police chief stuff, like meeting with the biker gang people or like, you know, having like an assault on the city or blah, 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 right? It was like, okay, cool. I understand what this character does and what he's about. And even if I forget his name and even if I forget like a lot about him, I still know what he is and what he does, right?
I could say, remember that police chief, and you would be like, yeah, I know who you're talking about. And
exactly.
It's very rare we see characters divorced of their context. And
yeah,
it just helps.
It is kind of odd.
It helps us keep everything in mind. And it really helps that really there's only like two characters who really are central to the plot. And even the recurring characters like Roshina and them, when you see them show up, you always think, right, it's this guy. And you have an idea of their character. And this show plays really good tricks because it has so many characters coming at things from so many different angles that there's this weird moment where General Botentine tells Roshina, he's like, stop pursuing Chirico. It's worthless. It's a waste of our resources. And I like weirdly felt for Roshina. I was like, you tell him, Roshina, like you dump on this guy about why this is important. Right. I'm like, wait, but we're not supposed to root for him. Like he tortured Chirico, but I like all these angles intersection. And I kind of found like a weird position where I didn't like him. And then I did like him. I think the show does a really good job balancing all these characters and making them all feel important without like telling us deep things about their past. If you pick up something about a character's personality in the show, it's based on the way they act and how they behave. I feel like I understand Roshina, and we've heard nothing about his parents, right? Like, it's all based on like his negotiation with Gon Nu and his like really good scene where he sits Chirico down and tells him about the perfect soldier concept. And like makes a deal with him, and then that scene with Batentine where they're verbally sparring, you sort of see what Roshina is like as a character. He's this really wily dude who like sort of takes things straight on but knows how to lay a plot and just wants to get to the bottom of things. He's kind of got that detective spirit. I like felt all of that, but it's done in such a naturalistic way. It's really expertly done.
Yeah, for sure.
It's my rant.
And I have one final question for you.
Yeah.
Who is our main antagonist?
So, yes. Great question. Is it Albert Killy, who's the leader of the Secret Society, as far as we know? But for me, my question is, like, why is the Secret Society doing all of this? Not, like, why were they in Kumin, but, like, why do they need a perfect soldier to begin with? Like, what are they going to do with it? Are they just going to be mercenaries? I can't help but feel like there's something else going on in the background that we don't know yet.
I know, it's so odd, because like in all the other shows, again, this Votoms is like actually kind of interesting in the sense that it strays far from a lot of our like archetypes and tropes that anime is like kind of known for, in the sense that when you have a mecha show, right, it's like the first episode is like, here's the bad guy and here's the good guy, and it might take a long time to get to the point where they fight, you know, the final fight, but you kind of always know who the main enemy is, right?
Yeah.
Zeon. Even if we don't know the exact face, it's like Zeon. Zentradi. The Zentradi, Gepelnitch, right? Macross 7. Like, we kind of know, and no matter how long the show is, yeah, that's gonna be it.
In the past, this, we have complained about shows that don't point us in a specific direction. Where we're like, what is this show? Macross 7, we were like, what is this show even doing?
Yeah.
In this show, though, they care about building suspense and the mystery so that not knowing is part of the enjoyment. Is your brain trying to get ahead of the show.
But I just like, it's so interesting that we are three fifths of the way through the show. And I'm like, I still like, I like the mystery and I've liked the action. I've liked the arcs and I've liked the characters, but I'm like, man, it's just interesting that I have no idea how the show is going to end. Cause I don't know who the antagonist is, like, because again, it's a mecha show, they're gonna kill someone at the end almost always, or they're gonna blow something up at the end, right? But what that is or who that is, I'm like, it could be Albert Killy, but man, they really, I don't know.
Yeah,
it's cool, it's interesting, it makes it more mysterious. I think this is doing it in a good way rather than a way where I'm thinking like kind of Knights and Magic-y, no offense to Knights and Magic, where I was just sort I was like, cool, the big alien monsters are going to be the main bad guys. And then they're like, just kidding, there's actually another country, and they're the bad guys. And it's like, wait, what?
Yeah. Knights of Magic, Knights of Magic is peak adaptation disaster. We both know that.
Yeah. But for this, it's more like I'm enjoying everything that's happening so far, but I'm like, wow, I still have no idea what's going on in a good way.
Yeah.
It's good. Fun to think about rather than being bait and switch.
Part of it is that I trust this show in a way I don't trust a lot of mech shows, where I believe it will be good. I believe it will be well written. And a lot of the time when I'm watching a show, I have no faith in that show.
I know. We're really pessimistic about shows on this podcast. We've and a seen lot of times we go, yeah, we like look at our watches, right? Our imaginary watches on our wrist and go, man, this show only has 10 episodes to finish and there's no way it can. And
some like shows decide not to do that. Right. Macross 7 just opted out of ending.
Yeah. Just like,
is that how that works, Macross? Like,
they are like the ultimate 4D chess move. It's fine. Don't
we
worry.
We know you'll
about
buy
it.
We know you'll buy these bonus discs.
God.
Let's do the mech corner. I've got two things to talk about.
Yeah.
And the first is Ypsilon gets a prototype mech, AT, that is designed specifically for Perfect Soldiers so that it can keep up with their reflexes. It's got the Gundam's like magnetic alloy coating. It's got the Alaya Vinyana system. It's like that sort of upgrade, right?
Uh-huh.
And what really gets me about this is I watched it and I was like, this is just the Dom. It's got the same eyes. It's got the wheels on its legs, so it sort of rips around the battlefield. I was like, wow, this is really a Kunio Okawara suit.
Yes.
It's easy to forget sometimes that this is like Okawara, right?
Yeah. The greatest mecha designer in the history of forever.
He might be. That's like,
yeah, actually.
We should do that sometime. We should really make an episode just diving into different designers.
Let's do the low tier thing where low tier, no pun intended, where we just like make a tier list of all of the mechas ever. The ultimate like low resource.
Yeah. Low effort.
Laziest thing to do. Yeah.
The other thing to talk about is this it's like the BATM03 fatty. Again, thanks Geocities, but I'm not sure if this is actually what it is. But this is the what we're talking about is the Balorant spacesuits. They're like a light blue. They've got the classic air jets on their back that allow them to like navigate through space.
Uh huh.
And Chirico fights a bunch of them when they're trying to attack the spaceship. I love the air jets. I'm always a fan of that concept.
Yeah, like the Vernier stuff. I like those too.
Yeah, I always come back to this, Dan. I'm always thinking about the AMBAC system in Gundam. Have you heard about this?
Oh. Yeah.
Where it's like the reason they have these arms and legs is because it allows them to use the momentum to orient themselves through space, mm-hmm. in like a zero G environment. Like, I don't know why, but anytime there's things moving in space, I always think about like how would this actually work. So I always like when a show thinks about the realistic situation of using these things in space.
Yeah, because this is very much like a real robot show.
It's extremely real robot.
I'm trying to think if there's anything that really pushes the limit, but it's just like jets.
They don't
and
even
tanks.
Have laser guns.
Yeah, and oh, they have really high powered whatever gun that Chirico has. But yeah,
they're all projectiles. They're just,
yeah, and they're pretty small too. Like Gundam's a little Evangelion. I mean, Evangelion's not a real robot, but Evangelion the Evas are like skyscrapers.
Well, they're variable sized. We tried to do this. Remember when we did Eva? We were like, how big is an Eva in meters? And the answer is like as big as the animator felt like it. They really play fast and loose with sizes in Eva.
And Gundams are, if you've ever seen the real life Gundam in Japan, they are a little unrealistic as well, but okay. But these are like, I could imagine a Votom, right? It's just like,
oh,
they're,
yeah,
like
they're small.
Barely bigger than a human. Okay, that's not true, but they're... They're like, oh,
they are
okay,
like 12
like,
feet tall or whatever.
Yeah, it's like a one-story house. Or like, yeah, maybe, you know, it's like, oh, okay. I can see this.
Yeah, they're more believable. I don't know. I like them. I think there's not much differentiation, but because the show is so real robot, it doesn't really matter that there's not much differentiation.
Yeah.
It's more believable that they aren't different.
Exactly. And if anything is different, they have a different color shoulder pad, which you can spray paint, right? Oh, totally. God. That makes sense.
All right. Dan, what are your final thoughts?
I'm still enjoying this show. I like it. I'm excited. I think they're tricking us and having very well-paced arcs in the sense that I'm totally done with Kunmen. I don't want to scan anymore. But I think it's really cool that the way they're starting this next arc is such a mysterious, like, different departure in a different setting that I'm excited. I will probably be totally done with this arc by the time we're done with this like recording next week, where it's like, oh my god, I'm so done. We're done with that ship. Blah 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 blah. I'm excited to see how this show ends. It's mysterious, and we're kind of getting to the final leg, right? So I'm like, I want to see some of the mysteries starting to wrap up, right? It's like, oh, what's going on? And then I want, like, I want to get to like a good final arc where it's like, this is where it's all gonna end. So I'm excited. I guess that's all I can say is I'm actually quite excited to see how the show ends, and I have high expectations, which is something I should not have, but I do. What about you?
I think you're totally right about the genre thing. When we watch an arc of a show we think is boring, and then the next arc starts, sometimes it feels like more of the same, even if it's a different story, right? Because the tone is the same, and the presentation is the same. In this show, we finish Kumen, and what we get next is completely different. Or you finish Ueno, and you get Kumen, which is different. And you finish Kumen, and you get this, which is different. So if you're done with an arc, which you are, because they are paced perfectly so that when it ends, you're like, please show me something else, you really get something else. And it's still familiarly Votoms, but it feels more fresh and exciting, so that I'm always looking forward to, at the start of an arc, like, where's this going to go? That's a big plus. Another thing is, we have so much to talk about during these episodes, right? We're not just talking about pacing. We actually have, like, characters and themes and illusions and, like, all this stuff to dig into. I think this is a really meaty show. You keep calling it dense, and I think that's right, but there's just a lot happening. And there's a lot packed into every episode, and it doesn't feel cramped, though. It feels like they tried to put as much meaning into it as possible. Which means that I'm really excited to watch more, and I'm always excited to talk about it. So there's, like, I'm enthusiastic about Votoms in a way I'm not about a lot of shows we watch on here.
it's refreshing.
So for next week, so Votoms, remember, is a 52-episode show, which means next week we're going to watch, or 2 weeks from now, we're going to watch episodes 31 through 41. So that's 11 episodes, and then we'll watch 42 through 52. So just add an extra episode to the end here if you are following along with us.
Yes.
If you want to reach out to us and, oh, geez, what do we want to know? I don't know. Don't tell us anything about what happens in the show, to be honest.
Please don't message us.
Yeah, I'm enjoying the ride. If you have interesting notes about Kumen, maybe that'd be fine. You can reach us at mechadoaboutnothing@gmail.com. That's the name of the podcast, @gmail.com. Our website is mechadoo.moe, and our Twitter account is @mechadoopodcast. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you, Ian.
Until next time, will you be able to survive?